Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center. I have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and hi, listeners. Is it spring where you are?
Yeah. Thanks for listening. And John Dougal on the right.
Let it snow, sunshine, ski, golf. Hey, whatever you want to do, just have fun.
I think the sun is shining on the Joe Biden and Kamala Harris campaign. They've announced their 2024 reelection bid this week. Did it in a three-minute campaign video. I have not seen it yet. I've heard clips of it. Shireen, this is your party. What did you think?
So I watched the whole thing.
Yes, Shireen. What did you think? All 3 minutes.
Yeah, all 3 minutes. You know, so a couple things. In the State of the Union, we saw some foreshadowing of what this conversation would be, which is basically like give him the opportunity to finish the job that he came into office to as a fight for the soul of this country. Certainly the video, which I encourage people to watch, opens with the horrific scenes from the insurrection, January 6th at the Capitol, and thinking about, you know, the work that's being done by Republicans and, you know, some, I would say, fairly extreme moves to reduce access to reproductive health care that are happening across this country. And many other things are kind of highlighted in the beginning. And then really, you know, he says, and I think this is true, he has done actually an incredible amount of work when it comes to infrastructure, when it comes to, you know, moving through COVID, really challenging economic times, and really just saying, let's keep this work moving. There's more to do. It's a hopeful message. I think it's a message about kind of that sense of dignity and pride that people have in this country, but also fearing what happens when we see more extremists in office.
Yeah, John, he's really drawing a distinction between, you know, MAGA Republicans, and he uses the term MAGA Republicans in the announcement, and his leadership, which is, you know, more geared towards preserving democracy. So, you know, in something as big as a presidential campaign, they've done their homework and they've decided that they need to feature this as a, what, generational choice? Your comments.
Generational choice, like a couple generations too old to run for president, kind of generational choice.
But I've got
a neighbor. I mean, he's a Democrat. Yes, we do have Democrats down in Utah County, a few of them.
Elected or not?
But he was bemoaning the fact that he's afraid that his party's going to nominate Joe Biden. And I think he's one that would have supported Joe Biden in the past, but I think he's at the point where he's just going, this is not the future of my party. This there's got to be something better. And I pointed out, unfortunately, on both parties. I mean, we haven't had great choices the last couple of elections.
And in fairness, I think there really hasn't been a conversation in the Democratic Party about what the future of this party looks like. Not since Obama, honestly, right? After Obama, it was kind of Hillary Clinton's turn, and then it was Joe Biden's turn. And even, you know, some of the most exciting candidates for me are certainly in a more progressive wing of the Democratic Party, but are not young leaders. So there is a deeper conversation that needs to happen here. But I also think that we continue to be in a really tenuous moment in our democracy. And I do think that Joe Biden has delivered on many of the promises that he made.
Shireen, again, I heard clips of it on radio. But to start out, as I understand the video with January 6th, is that correct? So looking backwards, this is, you know, unusual. Normally, elections are always about the future. What do you make of him looking backwards in his announcement?
I think the Biden campaign is anticipating a Trump-Biden round two.
Interesting.
And that's why that's there.
Interesting. And John, your last comments on it. Because someone's to argue that Trump's who he wants to face. So why go after?
Trump's who he wants to face because I think everybody else he loses to. So that's what he wants to stir up. That's the narrative he wants to tell. Even if Trump's not on the ticket, that's the narrative he still wants to tell.
Okay. Interesting. Well, lots of news in Fox News land. John, we'll start with you here. They've agreed to pay, it's over $785 million to Dominion Voting Systems.
$787.5 million. That is a lot of money, no
matter
who you are.
Largest defamation lawsuit in media history.
And I get that Fox didn't say that they made a mistake, but
They
sure paid out.
Well, and it speaks volumes, doesn't it? Meaning they don't need to admit that they made a mistake. They paid that much money.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the depositions and how things were falling and what things went Dominion's way, in terms of judicial rulings versus didn't go Fox's way, it was not going to be a pretty trial for Fox.
Yeah. John, sometimes I turn these things over to Shireen and she says, that's right. And so I'm going to give her a that's right. And that is to say, this looks to me like performative journalism that's gotten in trouble.
That's right. But to be clear, so what you're talking about are shows like Tucker Carlson's show, right? Mm-hmm. Or certainly there's a long legacy of these individuals
the show formally.
On Fox. Yeah,
lots
exactly.
Lots of
formally.
Women with blonde hair.
Yep, we've had some of those. And then also, you know, back to Glenn Beck, Bill Riley, right? These are not – this is not news. Mm-hmm. This is performance – art in Fear and Rage.
I think she had quotes around
that's
art.
Right, that's right. So yeah, that is where a lot of the trouble in this case came from.
I told Tim Shriver, I spent a lot of time with him last week. So of course, this is the nephew of President Kennedy. This is Sergeant Shriver, Eunice Kennedy Shriver's son. Anyway, I told him, you know, do you watch cable news? And he goes, oh, I don't call it that. It's cable TV. Mm-hmm. He said, this isn't news. So, to that point.
It is not news. That's my point. It's commentary. It's entertainment. It's other things like that. But it's
certainly
rarely
news. It certainly sets a larger narrative, though, that we have seen across, you know, I mean, we see this on the left and the right, but in particular from my experience in 2018, things that were on Fox News were certainly what people were telling me at the door. So it certainly is infiltrating the American public and populace in a way that is driving talking points or the way that people are thinking about what's happening to them
no
in their
question.
Country.
Yeah, no question. John, what do you make? I mean, by the time this airs, maybe Tucker Carlson will have spoken out. But so far, he's silent. But Fox is saying, we've fired you. And history would say that when they've parted ways with some of their hosts, their relevance diminishes. It's like Fox is the brand, not the host. Curious if you see it that way.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, I heard some commentary this morning where it was talking that sometimes you get these personalities on Fox or other stations who think they're bigger than the station, and then they're taught a lesson that, no, the station, the brand is bigger than you. It's an interesting dynamic to do a show on Friday and find out Monday morning that you are gone, that your last show was already done and in the can, and, you know, you're not going to be with them anymore. And, you know, we're seeing it mix up at, you know, Fox, but we're seeing at other stations as well, shaking up some of their personalities and sudden dynamics.
Shireen, in my line of work, when you're analyzing data and you spot a trend or you see a tipping point or you find a correlation that's really strong, that's really exciting. Can you imagine what it felt like to be the Dominion voting machine attorneys when they got to see these text messages from Tucker Carlson?
I mean, wow.
Wow.
What a great day if that's you. The way that he portrayed himself, I think the communication was certainly very sloppy, certainly reflected poorly on how he thought about his own management, really put the entire case, I think, into this kind of settlement territory because of the sloppiness with which they talked about, you know, ultimately what they were doing, which was lying to the public about election fraud, right?
Yes.
I'm so curious, you know, when I think about the really damaging and divisive work that Fox does to infiltrate, I think, people's minds, and I talk to people who feel like they've lost family members to the fear and rhetoric that they consume through, you know, people like Tucker Carlson. I'm so curious what you think in the work that you're doing, Natalie, around, you know, dignity and public discourse, when you think about what's happening kind of in the broader landscape of how we speak to each other, the way we engage with ideas. What do you think it means to have Tucker Carlson leave?
Oh, I mean, I was happy about it because I find him such a divisive figure, but I have no confidence that they're going to bring in someone else that kind of, you know, calms things down. I've been telling people that we need to unify and dignify. Those are sort of the marching orders that I've kind of given to myself and to my children and whatnot. And I wish Fox would do that. Yeah. I wish CNN would do that.
Not
I wish
sure it sells.
MSNBC,
yeah, doesn't sell. John, we have...
And why doesn't it sell? I mean, I think we all agree it doesn't sell.
Dopamine hits because you get rewarded for your point of view.
Yeah, you get
over
attention.
The more intense, yeah.
Yeah, it's rewarding. I mean... you know, some people are so excited that Tucker Carlson got fired and they're just taking a hit, meaning a dopamine hit. They're like, yeah, my side's winning today.
Right.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Well, if you can distill it down into a little tweet or a little soundbite, okay, it sells. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a complex issue. Let's spend a half an hour discussing it.
Doesn't sell. Yeah. Except for to you listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, we will cover a couple different topics in that.
John, that's right. Hunter Biden's laptop, like it should be a statue at this point. It's brought up so many times. But you've got this issue of putting out stories that were actually put out by a campaign. Tell us more.
Yeah. So we found out just recently when it came to this, the story first came out and then the Biden campaign, Anthony Blinken, who's now Secretary of State, reached out to Michael Morell, former acting director of the CIA, and got him and, you know, 50 other former spies to sign a letter basically saying, oh, this looks like a Russian, you know, information plant type of activity. And to come to find out, no, it was really being driven by the campaign. The campaign immediately was using it for purposes that it wanted to try and discredit a story that actually had more truth to it than they wanted to admit. And so I find that, you know, just, you know, concerning. And to me, what this part of what's so concerning is so many Americans believe in this thing called a deep state. Mm-hmm. And so this just feeds into that narrative.
Boy, doesn't it.
When you have bureaucrats like this or former bureaucrats helping drive a certain narrative without disclosing the facts that they didn't really have any facts to base this letter on, and yet it was being used by the campaign, and they likely knew it was going to be used.
Tell
that
our audience your media source for this.
Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. And so, I mean, to me, I think that's a reputable, great paper.
And how did this information come to light?
House committee?
Yeah.
Deposition so, of Michael
Morell.
This
Morell. Is the issue I have.
But it was
we have House committees. We have House committees on Hunter Biden's laptop. We've got the House passing in our nation's capital anti-trans legislation. We have, you know, all of this hoopla around issues when I would like to see actual advancement on issues like inflation. I would love to see the House tackling matters that actually matter to everyday Americans. I understand that it's important for this information to come to light, but what I'll tell you is that I see a party that continues to go down the road of these very kind of back to divisive issues that are not really addressing the core problems like the cost of healthcare in this country or the fact that we don't have enough housing. These are real concerns that I don't see being the top priority. What I see being the top priority are back to these issues. Mm. Hunter Biden's laptop and if the few trans kids who want to play sports in this country are allowed to.
So what
that.
You're telling me is we've got a president who intentionally deceived the American public and hey, no big deal.
So
if it were
just,
Trump, I think you'd say something different.
I just
but
want
Biden
you to know,
deceived
we're way beyond that
and
at
it's
this
okay.
point. No, we're way beyond that at this point. What I see is a House that cannot stop engaging in these culture war issues. I would prefer to have other candidates to talk about, certainly when we go back to the Biden or Trump situation. No doubt about that. But that's politics. So, and I'm sure you know that. So I don't, frankly don't believe your outrage.
Yeah. No. Well, okay. You may not believe it, but I'm troubled by this. And I got a Secretary of State who is engaged in this that I think he should be tossed now.
And it feels like deep state
discredits it discredits the whole administration right there.
Okay. In our next segment, boy, we're going to talk about just Governor that. Ron DeSantis at the Utah GOP convention. John Dugal was there. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
John Dugal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We like to talk about issues of interest to everyone, and so let's talk about the GOP convention held at Utah Valley University. The headliner was Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. I found it interesting, John, just that he even took this invitation to come to a red state, you know, in the interior western United States, and that it was worth his time. So what did he do? Set the stage.
So we don't usually have a keynote speaker at the Republican convention.
Okay.
So this was kind of a different kind of dynamic. Clearly, he was coming to a friendly audience with his message.
Do you think he reached out and said, hey, I'd be willing to come if you send the invite? Or do you think our folks were forward-looking and did it themselves?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if our folks reached out and said, hey, would you have an interest coming out and stuff like that?
Got it. That's a good answer for them on that day.
Yeah. And for him, clearly, it's a chance for him to test the waters as he travels the state to try and determine.
Get experience.
Whether or not he wants to consider jumping into the presidential race. I mean,
yeah.
I think everybody's just assuming that he will, but this is a chance to see what kind of reception you get in a state like Utah.
It might sound disrespectful for me to say get experience. He's a sitting governor. But I'm just meaning on the presidential campaign world, if you're in Utah as a Republican, that's a good place to hear yourself talk and, you know, get better at what you do.
Uh-huh. And you had, you know, clearly in Utah, you had a lot of elected officials that encouraged him to form an exploratory committee and stuff like that.
Our governor said positive things about him. Shireen, he says that Florida is where woke goes to die.
Yeah.
How do you like that little tagline?
Well, I'm not sure what it means, right? To stay woke, the notion comes, it's actually rooted in the sense that you should stay aware, that you should stay, you know, thoughtful, engaged, try to understand what's happening around you.
Be awake.
Yeah. It certainly has been, you know, transmorphed to mean lots of other things, but that is where it came from. And, you know, when I look at the policies that Governor DeSantis is proud of, what I see is a restriction and rolling back of freedom. I know that he would certainly say, you know, that freedom is really working in Florida, but not if you're a person who has been sexually assaulted and is seeking an abortion, not if you're a person seeking health care, gender-affirming health care, not if there are books that you want to read, not if you want to talk about your, you know, sexual orientation in high school. All of these things are being rolled back and made more difficult, I should say, in a highly gerrymandered state. Yeah. These are not things that sound like freedom to me.
John, those are great points, Shireen. And I'm referencing this to John because of our similar party background, but I've made it a habit over the course of my career to go see, political leaders and just to feel it. Be in the room when they're there. I remember the first time I saw Governor Pence at the time. I knew he was going to be a presidential candidate. And, like, he filled the room, you know. And I've been in the room with Bill Clinton. Wow, that's a memorable experience. In a room, you know, here in Salt Lake over at Kim Gardner's office, and there's 10 of us in the room. And I got to be one of them, and I got to kind of see this. It was after he was president. But presidents are – they carry
– Gravitas.
Yeah, about them. So I wanted to ask John, had you seen DeSantis before? Did you like him? Did he have appeal, charisma? Was he Kennedy-esque if you were in the Democratic Party?
So I've only seen him on TV. I've never seen him in person before. I met him at the event and stuff like that. Clearly he has a presence.
They said, here's the state auditor, and you shook his hand?
Yeah. Governor,
nice.
This is John Dougal, state auditor, and stuff like that. So, you know.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. You know, clearly he has gravitas. He had presence, stage presence. He clearly controlled the room. Both he spoke briefly in a small breakfast meeting, and then clearly with an audience of, you know, about 3,000 people and stuff. And so he
spoke for about
45 minutes there and stuff. And he touted, you know, the free state of Florida, and he talked a lot about the importance of people voting with their feet, and people are voting to go to Florida and stuff like that. And so he touted what he considers the successes in Florida and the battles he's fought, and why he believes that's been good for America.
Say that again, Shireen.
With a mouse.
He's in a fight with
a mouse. Oh, with Mickey Mouse. I got it. It took me a second.
So the question that I have, though, is, you know, I'm so curious that he came here, and if there was any sense, I'm sure he wouldn't talk about it. But donors are walking away. There's a sense that he's, you know, he had a moment and
hasn't been a good.
It's on the decline. These last few weeks have not been good. Is there any sense? I'm sure nobody bothered to ask, but, like, what's your read on what's happening in the sort of Republican kind of conversation around who should ideally to replace Trump, right? What's your read on why he's kind of tanking?
Well, let me touch really quick on the straw poll that was taken.
Yeah.
Of the delegates that were here.
Yeah.
So of the delegates, DeSantis got 55% of the vote. Trump got 30% of the vote. So it's almost 2-1.
Isn't it crazy, though? Trump always gets about a third. Of anything he does.
Which is going to be a problem if we have a crowded field.
That was an interesting dynamic with DeSantis getting basically 2-1 versus Trump. Nikki Haley got 5%. Mike Pence, 3%. Vivek Ramaswamy got 2%. Tim Scott, 2%. Asa Hutchinson, 1%. And Kristi Noem out of South Dakota, 1%.
Yeah.
And so that kind of showed the sentiment of the delegates there. And so from their perspective, they would not say that he's peaked and he's on the decline.
But that is what's happening nationally.
For those delegates, they believe he's still on the rise.
John, all the coverage said that he threw out red meat for the audience. You got to speak at the convention as well as our state auditor. You had like 3 minutes on the agenda. What did you share? Did you throw out red meat, or were you in the productive middle a little bit?
Well, I talked a little bit. I like to quote Reagan, and so I talked about, you know, Reagan talked about the government's view of the economy. Uh-huh. So if it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. And yeah. I just pointed out that in Utah, unfortunately, we still tax too much, we still regulate too much, and we still subsidize too much.
Uh-huh. Did you say we invest too little?
Well, you know, we don't.
There's always next time.
We don't return enough money back to the people. Yes.
One last thing on the convention. There's new leadership. I don't know their names, but they're talking about a party that's boldly conservative. And I'm wondering, John, what does that mean, boldly conservative? Because to me, boldly conservative means free markets, you know, limited government, individual freedoms and liberty. And it's not the place where the Republican Party is right now.
Yeah. So conservative. It depends how people shake out and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
the boldly part is coming off of kind of Governor DeSantis's message, which is it's one thing to be a quiet conservative and to shy away from the battle versus step into the breach and fight for the values that you believe in.
I know how John's going to answer this, so I'm going to go to you first, Shireen.
All right.
Right now, who's your pick for president, just for fun?
Oh. I'm riding with Biden.
Yeah, you have to, right?
Yeah, he's the
I
guy.
I don't really have a choice.
And John, who's your guy or gal?
I don't have one right now.
I want to see.
I mean, I'm very intrigued, for example, with Tim Scott and his life story and his
okay.
experience. So I really want to hear.
He's a
more.
Senator.
He's a senator out of South Carolina.
I'm in the Chris Sununu camp.
Oh, wow. Okay, Chris Sununu has been making some noise.
I watch him.
I'm not.
Yeah, but yeah. He's basically the Republican candidate that's willing to say that Donald Trump is not, you know, not worthy of our parties.
Oh, my goodness. You know who else is saying this too? Now I forgot. Chris Christie.
He's out there swinging,
too.
And he's just not as reverent and you know, well-spoken and behaved as Chris Sununu. So.
But it is interesting to see some of these leaders really trying to take on, you know, what Trump is meaning to the future of the Republican Party, speaking of thinking about futures and political parties. But when I guess the thing that I keep getting worried about is that it seemed like maybe this would be a small field.
Mm-hmm.
It is for the Republicans. It does not look like it's going to be a small field.
It looks like it's going to be a big, messy field.
A big, messy field, which, again, I think says we're talking Trump-Biden.
Yeah,
round
okay.
two.
Yeah. Okay. John, and then we'll let Shireen comment as she likes. But Speaker Wilson made his big news about his exploratory committee for the U.S. Senate Romney seat. It's now been a few days. But my understanding is it's gotten pretty chaotic up on Capitol Hill. When a sitting speaker announces a Senate race, you know, prevailing wisdom is he can't be in office next session. And so there would be a resignation
and
if
why,
he goes.
Why is that?
He just have so many conflicts.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of work.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Marty Stevens was speaker when he ran for governor and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. so I've seen that. But I've also heard folks, former Speaker Greg Hughes said, there's no way I could have run for governor while being speaker.
Yeah.
I would have needed to be former speaker because just the time commitment of the legislative session versus the time commitment of the campaign falling on top of each other, you just can't do it.
Yeah. Shireen, the way that it comes into your world is that, in my view, Speaker Wilson has been one of those really grand leaders that sets an aspirational vision and aligns people behind that vision. And when you have a vision, you're trying to get things done if you're doing it right, which is what he does. Anyway, you lose a talent like that on Capitol Hill, and the productive middle and maybe even the liberal voice loses something.
Well, this was my concern. You may remember I mentioned this last week. I'm grateful, you know, to those willing to serve in our legislature, but I feel like those in leadership have a particularly challenging role.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't believe that everyone's cut out for that level of negotiation and diplomacy.
John, what do people say about who would be the incoming speaker if this were to play out as it looks like it might?
I'm not close enough to those discussions
right now.
But I would assume
he knows the answer. It's Mike Schultz. It's Mike Schultz.
I was going to say, but I would assume it's Mike Schultz because he's majority leader.
Yeah.
But I haven't been in the middle of those discussions. But I would assume it's Mike Schultz.
Yeah, that's good. That's fair enough. That's just my thought there. What else do you guys want to talk about today?
As another elected official, you just don't inject yourself into leadership races in the House and Senate.
Yeah.
It's their business, not mine.
Yeah, I got you. Shireen, you saw the buildings in Draper fall down.
I did.
Sad.
Oh, terrible. Yeah. So a few, but still, I mean, a catastrophic loss, right, for these families. But basically a development that was on the edge of a
Ravine.
Yeah. And just the devastating footage of those families, you know, losing their homes. It did sound like there was good coordination conversation to get people out of the home so there were, you know, no lives were lost. But that is awful.
Yeah, rough. And John, Alta passed the 900-inch mark.
Wow.
Something my husband's been watching closely. And you've got the—
That is a record, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Central Utah Water Conservancy District announcing this week that they're going to put 50 million gallons a day of water back into the lake.
What does that do in terms of the height? Do you know how that translates into—
I do know that we're, you know, we're 3.5 feet up. And the other thing I know is that it gets harder as you go because it's deepest in the middle and then it kind of
shallows
out.
Yeah.
So it's harder to get elevation gain as you get out. But, you know— they're doing the right
thing.
Every
little drop matters. Yeah.
Every drop matters. I also will just give one last plug. If you, especially now that we're seeing a little bit of, you know, warmer temperatures, if you can, if you see a drain that is blocked, go move out those twigs, move out, you know, debris that might be blocking storm drains. It is going to be critical that we're all eyes and all hands on to make sure that water can get where it needs to go.
The likelihood is when we talk next week, we'll be talking about flooding.
Flooding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great program. I'm Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shereen Gurbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for your interest.